Oh, thank you. But you never go thirsty. Hong Kong Thai. Are you Thai or Singaporean? Thai. Oh, Kong Thai. Okay, okay. Very good. So just a little bit of housekeeping before we start the talk. This is the first day. Remember, the first day will always be disorganized this way or that way. So remember that that is the nature of life, to be disorganized. If any of you don't like organized religion, always become a Buddhist, because we are disorganized religion. But it works, it gets done, somehow or other. So if something doesn't work, it doesn't matter. You can always have another alternative. And someone said the dishwasher was a bit slow this morning. And then, what do you mean the dishwasher? There are three dishwashers in this in the kitchen. There's the electric dishwasher, and number two is the left hand, the other one is the right hand. The three dishwashers. So you can always do something with what you've got. And for the roster in the morning, there's a roster somewhere. That's in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Kitchen roster, yeah. It's just helping out. This is much cheaper than a hotel. Unfortunately, you don't get room service here. We didn't put a button in your rooms so you can press for room service. So we just help out a little bit, and that's good karma as well. And the roster in the morning, please eat breakfast first and then go and do the dishwashing afterwards, about 7:20. Because otherwise, if you haven't eaten breakfast, you're so weak, you can't even press the button to get it started.
May I clarify?
Okay, go on. That's the VIP, the business class. So you have to do business. Very good. So please, if someone's on the roster, let them go ahead of you, because they haven't got much time. Very good. And ask also if anyone needs extra sleeping blankets.
If anyone's cold.
Cold? This is not cold, this is cool. And being cool is a great place to chill out. So you normally find if you're tired, you sleep no matter whether it's hot or cold. I remember this one story from a couple who lived in England during the Second World War. And that was a time when there was just not one terrorist bomb. There was hundreds of bombs going off every night. You know, sometimes people get a bit soft these days. One bomb, it goes all over the news, all over the world. In those days, there was hundreds, 200, 300, 400 bombs every night during that Second World War in London. And of course, when those bombs went off, it was very hard to go to sleep. You had to get up, the sirens went, you had to go to the air raid shelter. When the sirens finished, then you had to get up again. And then you had to go and go to work. So a lot of people were losing a lot of sleep. And this one couple said, one night, the siren went off, there was another air raid, bombs were going to be falling from the sky. And they'd missed so many days of nights of sleep, they say, what the hell, we don't care, we're going to sleep. And they slept in the bed all night. You know, if they get hit, that's just bad karma, that's all. And even though explosions going on all around them, they had this really good night's sleep. And they woke up in the morning having a very deep sleep, and oh, we're alive, that's good too. So it just really showed you that when you really are tired, even if a bomb goes off next to you, you won't get up. Actually, that's most of you now, I think. I don't think it's that bad. But don't really worry. If you don't sleep well at night, you can always have a sleep during the morning meditation, like someone did this morning. Or you can just go back to your room and have a bit of a rest. So that's the first thing on this retreat. Many of you have been on a retreat with me before. And you know, it's a very soft retreat, a very gentle retreat. Because I want to make sure you all relax. And when you relax, it's very easy to meditate and make the mind peaceful. And when the mind's peaceful, you experience, you know, the powerful mindfulness, the joy, all the insights which come from meditation. We have to start by relaxing, first of all. So that's why actually I'm quite happy. If you take an extra blanket because you're more relaxed in your bed, fine. And if you sleep in the first few days, fine. The classic story, which I like telling on every retreat, is of this woman from Sydney. I gave a retreat in Sydney many years ago. And she arrived at the retreat maybe about midnight on a Friday. Because, you know, she had to, like many people, she had to finish all the jobs in her office. She was an executive at a company. And even though she stayed till 11 o'clock, and still everything wasn't finished, but it was, okay, that's it, I'm going. So she arrived very late at this retreat center. And when she got up in the morning and came for the first interview, I told her, look, just relax a bit. And so she took that advice. So after breakfast, she went back to her room and slept until lunch. She got up for lunch, and after lunch, she went back to bed again for a couple of hours. And she did that for about 3 days. And all the friends, because this was a retreat center, not like this five-star one where you got your own room, well, there's actually three other girls in the same room with her. And she said she could feel the jealousy coming from these three other girls. They just didn't have the guts to do what she was doing. No, they were getting up and saying, why are you getting up like I? If I have to suffer, you have to suffer too. But no, she just carried on sleeping. And of course, after 3 days, all she'd really done was catch up on her sleep. But after 3 days, imagine an executive working really hard, so many hours every day. You're so tired and worn out. But after 3 days, her body felt so good. And, you know, her brain was relaxed. And then she started her meditation retreat. But because she started from a place of, you know, real good bodily relaxation, that meant that she made very quick progress. And on a 9-day retreat, by the next 3 days, she caught up with everybody else. You know, in her progress in meditation, by the end of the retreat, she was far ahead. And I like that, telling that story, because it just shows you, so you know what to do. Now, those of you who are retired, you don't need to follow that advice. You haven't been working very hard. So. But those of you who have been really working hard, look after your body first of all, because that was the Buddha's teaching, the middle way. And that was the very, very first teaching the Buddha gave. And it's an important teaching, which too many people forget. And the Buddha there was striving, working hard, trying to get enlightened, going without sleep, going without food, really being ascetic. And after 6 years of that, he realized his body was too tight. It was too hard to get any meditation. When he recalled the time under the rose apple tree as a kid, when he got his first experience of jhana, you know, he thought, that's the way to Bodhi, that's the way to enlightenment. That's from the Mahasachaka Sutta, number 36 of the Majjhima Nikaya. Maybe this is a path to enlightenment, because he tried everything else. And the insight came to him, yes, that deep meditation is the path. But the next thing he said was the important part for this beginning talk, was you can't get that deep meditation when the body is so tight and tired and it hasn't got the strength and the energy. Which is why, you know, he said, well, I'll eat properly, I'll rest, I'll bathe, and then when my body is nice and comfortable, then I will meditate, which is what he did. And when he chose a place to meditate, he didn't go into some mosquito-infested jungle. He actually went to the banks of this beautiful river Niranjalan. Many of you have been on pilgrimage to Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha became enlightened. It's like a park. It's like, you know, these days, if the Buddha had got there, first of all, it would be a resort on the banks of the river. You know, very beautiful, a few trees, good wind, good water, comfortable and shady. Because it had to be a place of reasonable comfort. And that, obviously, that understanding of how to get into these deep meditations was one of the reasons why we located this retreat center here. It's peaceful, it's comfortable, and why we gave you such nice rooms and good food. We're not indulging you, we're not trying to just be too soft. Because I, as a teacher, know that this is really important if you're going to get into deep meditation. Be able to sleep well at night, have a toilet, have decent food, so your body feels relaxed. When it's relaxed, it has energy, you don't have to worry too much about sickness and tiredness, so you can really get some deep meditation. So the first times, you know, that people, when they come here, they do have the sloth and torpor, you know, they start to nod and snore and their mind is very dull. Why is that? It's nothing wrong with you. It's not that you can't meditate. It's just nature, that's all. It is because you're tired. The brain is tired. They know the best antidote to sloth and torpor is called a bed. Let's just go and take a rest. Especially for the first 3 days, you have permission from me. Any time of the day or night for the next 3 days, you can go and take a nap whenever you want. And yet it's just a beautiful thing to do that. At last, you're not in Singapore anymore or in Penang. You're in Jhana Grove. So any time you feel, yeah, I really need a rest, you can just go and lay down, have a nice rest. You don't have need to set your alarm clock. And please, don't worry, you'll miss lunch. I guarantee you will not miss lunch. There is an alarm clock connected to your tummy, and it will tell you exactly when lunch is. You get up. Sorry. So, just go and have a nice relax. You know what another word for that relaxing is called? It's called letting go. So you have a nice rest, have a good sleep, any time of the day. And when I've done that, when I get up afterwards, I feel so powerful. Sometimes all I need to do is give my body half an hour. I don't know why, it may be some sickness in the body. It may be some tiredness for not sleeping the night before. But when you feel that tiredness inside, just go and lay down half an hour and you go into a nice sleep. When you get up afterwards, ooh, you really feel good. Your body's relaxed, and then you sit meditation. It's really good, very deep. I've done a lot of times. Sometimes I've gone without sleep, just pushing myself. And then the body is so tense, the mind is tense, and you just can't get peaceful. Even though you've got all the tricks, but the body's not ready. So please, for the first couple of days, if you feel like resting, just rest. Which also means for the first 3 days, actually for the whole days, because, you know, you've got your own rooms, but you haven't got your own cottage. So please, as you go inside and outside the cottage during the day, please practice what we call in Buddhist meditation, the burglar practice. Imagine you're a burglar in Penang or Singapore. If you're a burglar and you bang the door and you act like an elephant, clomp, 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 you're going to get caught. So when you go into your hut during the middle of the day, imagine you're a burglar. You open the door so quietly. Because if you make a noise, you'll get caught and go to jail. You open up very quietly. And you close it without making a sound. And you creep so softly. And you open your door. No one hears it. And you can sneak into your room and out again. No one hears you come. No one hears you go. That's called the burglar practice. And if you train like that here, when you get back home, if you haven't got a job, you can always work for the spy agency, not a burglar. But you can do that only if you are mindful, you're aware, and you're caring. You're caring about yourself and caring about others, which is really important. So be mindful, be compassionate. So when you go in and out, You don't make much noise. You're silent. Just like the cat who's stalking the bird. The bird doesn't know a cat's coming. Have you watched cats? They're amazing how mindful they can be. So you be like a cat burglar. So you can go in and out without anybody hearing you. If you do that, people will be very happy with you. That in their hut it is quiet. If you want to talk and have a conversation, you're allowed to have a conversation. But you have to walk to the end of Kingsbury Drive, to the highway down there. So, to try and keep it quiet. Because you talk to each other all day, all year. This is the time to be quiet. So you don't need to have conversations. Don't go asking people about how they're meditating today. Because when they tell you how deep they've gone, you'll get embarrassed. It's best to keep quiet. And the trouble is, when somebody talks to you, how do you tell them not to talk? Because if you say don't talk, you're talking as well. So what to do? If you want to keep quiet and someone comes up to you and say, "Hey, excuse me, can I ask you something?" Don't say anything. Get your finger. Give them a one finger sign, but not the usual one finger sign. They have it. That's all you need to do. The one finger sign. The Buddhist one finger sign, not the American one finger sign. And then when they're quietened down, you can go away. You haven't said anything, but you told them, shh. And after a while, if you practice like that, you'll find the whole place becomes very silent and quiet. Because you're not encouraging too much talking. And you'll find that will make the place such a wonderful retreat. Too much talking, you're wasting your time. You come all this way, spent a lot of money, having to take leave. Now you're here. Make the best use of it. Be quiet. It's tough at first, not talking to each other, but you do get used to it. One of the things which I like doing, just to tell people about this and to prove it, usually at the end of the retreat, before people leave, the last day, I tell people, "Oh, okay, you can talk now." You know what usually happens when I give them permission to speak? Nobody wants to. Even though they can, they don't. The reason why is because they enjoy the silence. Silence is golden. And since the GFC, the price of gold has gone up. So silence is worth much more than it was last year when you came here. So please make the best use of the silence and just enjoy it. And that will make the mindfulness and the kindness stronger and stronger and stronger. And especially when you're in the dining room. In the dining room there, you've got this delicious food. And this lady, Visakha, she's out there cooking for you. And what happens? Do you appreciate her food? No, you just bung it in your mouth and go, ba 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 ba, to somebody else, bung it to your mouth, ba 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 ba. You don't know what you're eating when you're talking. You might as well be eating junk food. So, when you're eating, so eating is only when the door, you know, like we've got these, some places, entry doors and exit doors. The exit door is speaking. So close that door and the entry door, so only things can go in. Nothing can come out. So just allow the food to be digested. Mindfully, silently. And if any of you have indigestion or gastric problems, a lot of it is because you don't digest your food because you're not aware of your food. You're shoving it in your mouth, a tiny little taste, and then it's gone. Instead, try putting it in your mouth and enjoying the taste as mindful as you possibly can, fully aware of all the flavors and tastes in your food. And because the food is usually delicious, that means more saliva will come out of your mouth. More bile and all these other digestive juices will come out of your intestinal tract and touch stomach, which means there'll be more juices to digest your food, which means more food will get digested. You won't have so many gastric problems, but you probably, because you get such good digestion, like me, you become fat. You get more out of the food you put in your mouth. But it does make you healthier when you're aware of what you're eating. And if you're talking or thinking, you're not really aware of what you're putting in your mouth. So especially in that dining area, be quiet. And of course, you know, you can have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or Milo or milk, whatever you want. But if you do have a cup of tea, the cup of tea should be taken silently. Just like the tea ceremony. This is not the Japanese tea ceremony. This is the Jhana Grove tea ceremony, where you make your tea and you drink it silently without saying a word. And then you can really enjoy the tea. You can take it out onto the veranda because we've got these beautiful views, you know, over the forest. It's a wonderful time of the year. You know, it's not really hot yet. It's not cold. It's in between. You know, these beautiful views after the winter time when everything's nice and green. Enjoy that. Have the cup of tea and enjoy the view. You can't enjoy things when you're talking. So, shh. And if somebody really is a chatterbox, and even if they keep on saying shh, shh, they still keep on speaking, please ask Dania for the masking tape. The masking tape is what you put around the mouth. You just put a little slit in there with a straw so they can have their food. And you can spend the rest of the treats with all those masks. I threatened to do that many times and think some people really deserve it. But out of compassion, I haven't done it yet. But there's always a first time. So try and be quiet. And when you're quiet and when you're relaxed, then you can start to meditate, which is what you're here for. And then you can start to appreciate all these amazing experiences which monks like me talk about, which you read in the books, which you'd love to experience for yourself. The heart of Buddhism. You all know the Buddha became enlightened not by talking over a bowl of noodles. He didn't become enlightened eating durian. He became enlightened by silently sitting meditation. That's where he became a Buddha. So this is what you can do. At least get close. So when you are sitting down, what do you do? There are three things you should do when you're meditating. Number one, make peace. Number two, be kind. Number three, be gentle. That's all the meditation instructions you really need. It does not matter what you are experiencing in meditation. Whether you are seeing beautiful lights, or whether you're thinking about the stock market, or you're thinking about the soccer, it doesn't matter what you're thinking. What really matters is how you are reacting to it. If you're making peace with this moment, if you're being kind, opening the door of your heart to this moment with no judgment, letting this moment be with kindness and not being aggressive, being gentle, you'll find whatever you've been watching will settle down and become calm. You will stop thinking. You are not interested in stock market or soccer or whatever. Everything becomes calm and still. Why? Because you create the causes for stillness. Making peace, being kind, being gentle. If you carry on like that, the mind slows down, become still. And then all these things which we talk about, what you experience in meditation, they come by themselves. You don't make them happen. You get out of the way and they happen by themselves. That's how things work. And for those who haven't seen the simile, which I often give, for how to meditate, because sometimes just talking is not enough, you usually give the simile of the cup of water. Now could you come up, because I need your assistance here. So I want you to be the witness, so be honest. I am now going to hold this cup of water perfectly still. Can you please tell me when it stopped moving?
Never, I think.
Never? So what should I do to get the water still? I am now going to concentrate.
Not working.
So I'm going to try harder. My goodness, okay, I'm not putting enough effort in. I'm really going to try now. Did you notice that when I try harder, it moves more? So how can I get the water perfectly still? Many of you have seen this before. There's only one way to get it still, which is to put it down. Let it go. Stop grasping, stop attaching, stop doing things. And then you just become this passive observer. What's the water like now? Perfectly still. So if you can actually get your brain, take it out through your ears and put it down. Or do something, learn how to let it go, then it's still. So thank you very much for your assistance. Now, what does that mean for meditation? So what we mean by making peace. Let it be. Stop controlling your mind. Many times when people meditate, they think, oh, they've got to watch the breath at the tip of their nose. And they get more tense. Or they think, no, that doesn't work. I've got to sort of be mindful. Be mindful. And it's too much controlling going on there. Which is the reason why people get tense. They never experience the beautiful freedom and peace of meditation. So learning how to put the cup down is a trick of meditation. So by putting the cup down, it's a very simple thing to explain, but very hard to do. So we have stages of putting down the cup. And the first stage is letting go of all the past and all your future. I don't care how many times you've been coming to my meditation retreats. Sometimes as a teacher, I get depressed. Some of you have been coming for years and years and years. You've got nothing to live for. But you're making some sort of progress. But I'll let all that go. So you let go of the past. So it doesn't matter sort of how stupid you've been or how bad you've been, especially these days. Now most people are into these terrible guilt trips. When they look back upon the past and they think of all the bad things they have done. And many people when they come on retreat, a lot of time it's just dealing with the guilt or the anger from the past, what people did to them. And that should be let go of. If you find it difficult to let go of the past, maybe an ex-partner has let you down, or more likely in Singapore, a business person has cheated you, and you've lost all your money or whatever, you have to start from scratch again. Or maybe a parent didn't look after you. Whatever it is in the past, if you can't let it go easily, you should try the psychology method, which I've promoted a long time now, of writing down all the terrible things which happened to you in the past. Write it down on a piece of paper. Only the piece of paper I ask you to write it down on is a special piece of paper called toilet paper. If you have got some, and use brown ink. I told this about a couple of days ago to some people who were having trouble with their past. They thought it was very funny, but it works. So you've got some terrible thing which has happened to you. You've been cheated in business. You know, your husband has a mistress, or your wife has just spent all your money, or whatever else has happened to you in the past. No. Write it down on a piece of paper. Brown ink on toilet paper. There's plenty of toilet paper in this place, so if you run out, we can give you another roll very easily. Write it all down. Carefully. Not scratching it out, but like very neatly. And once you've written it out, then you read it, because it's acknowledging the past, which is important. You're not in denial. Yes, this happened. Yes, this was awful. So you read it. And psychologically, because it's on toilet paper, because it's a brown colour, you associate that with the normal stuff which goes on toilet paper, which is brown. It's those bad memories that are not worth keeping. If you did go to the toilet and you got some feces on your hand, would you actually carry it around all day? Now, would you sort of go home to Singapore or Penang with it? Of course you would. As soon as you possibly could, you'd wash it off. Not just because it's unhealthy, because it also stinks as well. Just like all bad memories, they're unhealthy and they stink as well. So you associate, this is not the sort of stuff I should keep. So then what do you do with toilet paper? You take it to the place where toilet paper belongs. The toilet. And you take this piece of paper with all the things, bad things that have happened to you, all the traumas, all the disappointments, all the times you've been cheated, and you do the letting go ceremony. You put it in the bowl and you press the button. Oh, and it all goes. And with it, you've let go of the past. Oh, what joy. You know, it can, does work, because sometimes just telling people to let things go is not good enough. They need actually to do something physically to reinforce, you know, the thought. So by doing that ceremony, it means you can free yourself from the past, whatever it is. So if you have trouble with the past, anything, get out the toilet paper. And it sounds funny, but it actually works. So it helps you let things go. And the next thing to put down, of course, is your future. I don't know, you've all got plans. Do you all know when you're going home? Who knows? People have been telling me that sometime this year there's going to be the end of the world. I don't know if it's going to be in October or November or December. We're getting pretty close now. So who knows? The end of the world might happen this week. So you'll never get back to Penang or to Singapore, or wherever you come from. This is it. So all your plans, who knows? Maybe this is the end of the world. What a wonderful place to end the world. In Jhana Grove with Ajahn Brahm. Oh, what good fun. Oh, yes, please, bring it on. Can we please have the end of the world this week before we... Now, what I'm saying there is you don't know. Of course, it's not going to be the end of the world. I absolutely guarantee that. Money back guarantee. But all the plans which we have, sometimes we waste so much time thinking about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And every time we think what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, we're not paying any attention to what we're actually doing now. We're missing out on life. What was it, the saying of John Lennon? Life is what happens when you're busy thinking about something else. We miss so much of life with our plans and memories. So here on this retreat, you don't have to plan anything. Everything is catered for. The food, you don't have to worry about where you're going to get the food. You don't have to worry about paying any bills. There are no bills to pay in this place. You don't have to worry about anything. It's all taken care of you. When the retreat finishes, whenever that is, then you'll be taken back to the airport. You don't have to worry. Isn't that wonderful? But sometimes you're addicted to worry. Even if you don't have to, you do. And why is that? It's because we're not used to staying in the present moment. We're not familiar with it. We're actually afraid of staying in the moment. It's because of fear that we like to plan for the future. We're afraid if I don't make plans, then things are going to go wrong. I have discovered over many years, when I don't make plans, that's true. If I don't plan things out, things do go wrong. But if I do make plans, they go wrong anyway. Either way, they go wrong. So I decide it's all the same anyway. I prefer not to make plans and just to enjoy things when they go wrong. Now, you saw me coming in here. I only sort of plan what I'm going to say just 1 minute before I say it. And that's the most. I just always do things at the last moment. It's wonderful. And things go okay. Just this morning, just working out, when the interviews are and working out the timetable and working out, put some chairs in between the offices. I always do things for the last moment. It's much more fun. Because then you're much closer to the event if you plan just before, so you can adapt much better. If you plan days in advance, you don't know what's going to happen. So you have to change your plans at the last moment. So that sucks having to keep changing your plans. So I just make my plans at the last moment, and I never have to change them. So, please get to understand that the only reason you keep wandering off into the future making plans is because you don't trust the present moment. If you really are Buddhists and you understand the law of karma, where is your future being made? When is the only time you can do anything about your future? It's right now. And the law of karma states, if you make this present moment peaceful, kind, gentle, that is the best you can possibly do for your future. Karma, you make good karma now, the only place you can make good karma, right now, which means your future will be wonderful. So this is actually, if you are worried about your future, and you always like planning, please figure it out. What am I doing? I'm actually destroying my future with all this worry and planning. I should stay more in the present moment. Just make this moment right now as peaceful, as kind, as gentle as possible. And then I know from the law of karma, my future will be wonderful. That's why I say that's all one does in meditation. Come into this moment, be here, be mindful with this moment. Make peace in this moment. It's the only time you can make peace. Be kind. It's the only time you can be compassionate. And be beautifully gentle. You do that moment after moment after moment after moment after moment. Every moment this is what you do. And you'll find, because of the law of karma, you'll have so much peace. Because you've made peace. And this beautiful, kind heart. Because you made kindness in every moment. And just your body and mind is so gentle. You understand what meditation is and how easy it is. You know what happens sometimes? People think, oh, meditation means I must be watching nimittas, must be in jhanas, I must be able to watch my breath go in and out, in and out, in and out. And when you can't do that, you make war. You have ill will and you're aggressive. It's not making peace, being kind, being gentle. It's the totally opposite. Ugh, you stupid mind. Come on, get your act together. Is that making peace or making war? Is that being really kind? Is that being gentle? That's why people don't get into deep meditation. They're trying too hard. They're fighting their mind. They're making war with their body. They're like US Marines going into Iraq with all guns blazing. Yes, you just get collateral damage that way. You get into more trouble than when you started. So please, don't do the US Marine meditation practice. Do the nice, soft, peaceful Buddha practice. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle in every moment. And just watch peace, kindness and gentleness grow. Hour by hour, day by day. Don't have too many plans. Right, at 10 o'clock I'm going to do this, at 10:30 I'm going to do something else, at 11 o'clock do something else. No, just adapt to the moment. See what you feel like doing and act accordingly. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. And then you'll find that you will have this very beautiful, soft mind which easily meditates. You just sit down there, you just made so much peace, so kind, so gentle. It's nothing disturbs you. You have put down the cup. That cup is perfectly still now. It's not moving. And it did it by itself. I have to mention here, those of you who've heard my talk so many times, you know that in the English, too often people call meditation concentration. Please, concentration has got nothing to do with Buddhist meditation. That was just a very bad translation done over 100 years ago. Meditation means stillness, not concentration. If you concentrate, you will never become still. You become hard and tense. Instead, if you think stillness, you'll understand the only way to be still is to let things go. To let them be. Stop moving things. And then the cup becomes perfectly still. Concentration is just holding things. Stillness is from letting go. And if you understand that, you'll find a lot of stillness in the next few days. It's not that hard to do. And when the mind becomes still, all those things which you thought you would get by concentration, they come by themselves. When you're still, you stay in the present moment. You don't even need to speak. What I think when everything is so quiet. One of the advantages of this place, Australia is one of the emptiest places. So you only have to come, this is only just 50 minutes outside of the CBD of Perth. And here there's hardly any sound at all. Maybe the sound of the wind. The animals don't make much noise. The kangaroos, maybe a bump, bump, bump if they're running. But usually they just graze very softly, you don't hear them. There are hardly any noisy animals in Australia, except for us. Which means at night time, there's hardly a sound to be heard. Yeah, there is a road up the top there. Maybe you get a car every 5 or 10 minutes. But there's hardly anything else. It's a very, very quiet place. So sometimes, you just go out, look at the forest, and allow the quietness of the forest, its stillness, to soak into you. Just listen to the stillness. Just let it go deep inside. Because sometimes that's all one needs. The stillness outside resonates and creates that inner stillness. And you understand what meditation is. Where everything becomes calm and still. Where nothing moves. And that's such a beautiful experience. It shows what meditation is all about. Again, I've got many stories, but one story which often comes to mind was after 7 years as a monk in Thailand, I went to visit my family in England. And I was a really stupid monk in those days, because I thought, well, the best time to visit your family, if you're Chinese, it's no Chinese New Year, for Westerners it's Christmas. And that's the most stupid time of the year to go to a place like England. It's freezing cold. It's dark and depressing. But well, one day I was staying in this new monastery and I saw in the newspaper the following day the temperature had got down to minus 26 degrees centigrade. And you know what British newspapers are like? The headlines were, even the beer froze. Because that's what they really care about, nothing else. So it's minus 26, so that's pretty cold. For, you know, for Helen from Norway, that's like summertime. But minus 26 degrees, and everything was covered in snow. And they have this saying that only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. Only mad monks who are English go out at that time when it's cold. So I went out early one morning, just have a walk in the forest, put as many robes on as you can because it's freezing cold. But as I walked in the snow, whenever I stopped, there was absolutely no sound at all. Because all the animals were hibernating. The animals were sleeping, and even the human beings would not go out in that temperature. Only a stupid monk. But I wasn't really stupid, it was amazing. You're in a forest, you know, in a first world country in Europe, and when I stopped walking, there was not a sound. Not even a leaf rustled. It was perfectly still. That was magic. Such stillness and freshness, where nothing was moving and everything was perfect, reminded me of what happens in meditation. We don't get quite that stillness in the Australian forest, but we get close. When nothing moves and everything stops, there's deep peace at last. Wow! So that is what stillness means. And that's what happens in meditation. Sometimes the mind becomes so still, it's like nothing moves at all. No thoughts, no feelings, everything has stopped. And you're aware, perfectly aware, enjoying every moment where all this agitation and movement has finally finished. That's why I like calling it stillness. And that stillness all comes from just making peace, being kind, being gentle. Don't be a driver, be a passenger. Don't keep doing things. Just see how passive you can be. Don't be a control freak. Just be somebody who puts things down and observes. Just watching, not doing anything. And then bit by bit your mind becomes more still. And that's where you start to appreciate the joy of meditation. I'll finish off with one of my favorite sayings. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. That's a nice expression of the Four Noble Truths. So in meditation, don't want anything more. Even if you're tired, this is good enough for me. Even if you're restless, don't want anything more. Because when you want something more, you can't enjoy anything. You can't be still. You can't find peace. So the end of wanting is called stillness, is peace. So see if you can do the not wanting. This is good enough for me. I'm here, this is good enough. My job is just to be content. Just to be here. So don't try and get something from this meditation retreat. Just try and be here. Be here in every moment as much as you can. Just be here making peace, being kind, and being gentle. That's all the instructions you need. Nevertheless, just to entertain you every morning, I will rearrange that talk into different ways. But still all the same, just making peace, being kind, being gentle, and being still. That's how to meditate. Okay, so, are there any questions about what I've just been saying? Very good. So those of you who are yawning, those of you who are tired, remember the best way to overcome sloth and torpor? So you can go back and have a nice nap before lunch or after. That's fine. Indulge yourself the first couple of days. Then afterwards we get a bit stricter. But actually after a few days you don't really need to sleep. It's quite natural. You know, sometimes, some of you, I'm sure this will happen, it always happens to some people, sometimes just you can't sleep at night. Not because you're anxious, because you've got energy, you don't need to. It often happens on a 9-day retreat. Some people come to me and say, I couldn't sleep all night. That's fine, what's wrong with that? Just meditate. But it must be something wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with it, it's nature. You become calm, becomes peaceful, the brain doesn't need to sleep, it's rested already. So you can always make up for all the sleep you do now later on. So just be kind to yourself. And for those of you who want interviews, I'll be outside the office, but I have to be quite strict with the interviews because I am going to be, because it's still the rains retreat, we haven't quite finished yet, I'll be eating over in Bodhinyana for my lunch. So I have to be over there by 10:30. So at 10:20, even if you're saying about the most important question of your life, I'm sorry, I'm leaving. So please be careful about that. So there is a list. On some days I won't be here in the morning, but always here in the afternoon for interviews. And because it's more convenient for me to have the interviews in the afternoon between 4 and 5:30. Now that does, the last half an hour, that does clash with your tea time. But you don't have to have tea at 5 o'clock. You can have it at 5:30. So you have the, you can come, you can even bring your cup of tea with you, or coffee, whatever you have, into the interview. So that's between 4 and 5:30 every afternoon will be the interviews. So that's convenient for me, because at 5:30 I'll go back to the monastery for the evening. And back again, in every evening, we do we do chanting at 10 minutes to 8. And that's followed by from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock with a question and answers. Those of you who haven't been here before, just outside is a table, and on the table there's a basket, and in the basket there's pieces of paper and pens, and you can ask any question you like. Even funny questions. I think what was the most weird question I got is, what's the karma of Buddhist lesbian mud wrestling? Or something really weird. Sometimes people ask the strangest of questions. But nevertheless, I'll try and answer them as best I possibly can. Not that I know anything about gay, lesbian, mud wrestlers. Anyway, so that's the questions in the evening. So any comments before we finish off? Is there any more announcements, Danielle or... Very good. Okay, so have a happy day. So have a rest or carry on meditating, walking meditation I'll talk about tomorrow. And in the meantime, have a nice time. Lunch is at 11.